Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We exited the holy month of Ramadan last week, and while Ramadan is still fresh in our mind, I would like to talk about an important topic in Islamic mysticism and tie this topic to the Ramadan fast experience, and that is personal transformation. Personal transformation is central to mysticism. In fact, mystics such as Rumi would argue that the whole purpose of religion is to transform us, to transform us on the image of God. Now, granted, the average Muslim does not appreciate Islam that way, nor does the average Muslim enter the holy month of Ramadan in search of a transformation. That is not on the radar of the average Muslim. The average Muslim fasts simply to discharge a religious obligation. So, the whole notion of Ramadan as a platform for personal transformation, I think, is alien to most folks. And I think this has something to do with ritualization of Ramadan today. Ramadan, for most of us, is a ritual. Now, if I were to speak more broadly, all three Abrahamic religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, are heavily burdened with rituals. Christianity today is a highly structured religion. It is very sensitive to theological doctrines, theological dogmas, such as Trinity, original sin, baptism, so on and so forth. Now, Judaism and Islam are pretty much the same, with one added feature. So Judaism and Islam are burdened with an added load, and that is legal codes. They are heavily loaded with legalism, fiqh. I believe that legalism is the defining characteristic of both Judaism and Islam today. And this is a betrayal. It's a betrayal of the founders of these great religions. If Jesus and Muhammad were to return today, I think they would be utterly shocked to see what their followers have done to their vision and their message. Take the Holy Quran, for example. If you read the Quran not with the lens of the prevailing Muslim beliefs, but without any presuppositions, I submit to you that you would come away with a feeling that the author of this book was not really concerned with formalities. The author of this book was not really concerned with formal beliefs and formal practices. Let me give you some examples. The Quran insists that God wishes ease for you, not hardship, not misery. Now, compare this Quranic statement with the massive legal codes that Muslim jurists have piled up for Muslims through the ages. The most important practice in the Holy Quran is Salat, or Namaz in Farsi, daily prayer. Yet the Quran does not even tell you how to perform your daily prayer. No formal method for daily prayer is mentioned in the Holy Quran. More than that, the Quran asks you not to be overly obsessed with the direction that you stand during your daily prayer. Because the Quran says, whichever direction you face, you are facing God. Honestly, sometimes I get the feeling that the Quran speaks of a different religion than what the average Muslim practices today. Now, with this critique of the common perception of Islam in mind, let's turn to personal transformation. In my last sermon, I tried to demystify the Ramadan fast for those of you who were present. If you recall, I talked about three different degrees, three categories of fasting: ordinary fast, extraordinary fast, and perfect fast. The average Muslim observes the ordinary fast. The ordinary fast pretty much involves abstaining from food, smoking, drinking, and sex during the day for one whole month. And at the end of that month, the month of Ramadan, there is a feast, there is a festival, which is called Eid al-Fitr. And Eid al-Fitr, for a typical Muslim, is a ritual. But the other two, extraordinary and perfect fast, cover a whole different territory. Those two, extraordinary and perfect fast, cover whole a lot more. The tongue, eyes, ears, and the heart fast as well. Now, this is a drastic departure from the ordinary fast because you cannot ritualize the fast of the eyes. You cannot ritualize the fast of the heart. Now, this type of fast was set up for an entirely different purpose: to facilitate a transformation. That was the design for these two other types of fast. And perhaps the underlying philosophy of extraordinary and perfect fast is most evident in the very word Fitr. Fitr is the climax of Ramadan. 30 days of fast leads up to Fitr. Fitr comes from the root word fatara in Arabic language. Fatara means to split, to crack open, to break. Now, the best way to think of the experience of Fitr is to picture a seed that you plant underground. At some point, the seed will split and a sprout emerges. That is Fitr for the seed. Or think of it as a bird that lays an egg. After a number of days, the eggshell splits and a baby bird hatch. That is Fitr for the egg. Now, in both cases, in the case of the seed and the egg, a new life emerges. So Fitr is about growth and blossoming. It's about rebirth. It's about transformation. Mystics such as Rumi invite us to view Fitr not as a ritual, but the experience of a personal transformation. We may experience a transformation in countless ways. Let me give you some examples of the manners in which you may experience a personal transformation. In the way you approach and you relate to the outside world. In the way that you treat other people. in the way that you relate to God, to your family, in the way that you form commitments to social causes. These are different ways that you may experience a personal transformation. Now, some transformations are limited in scope, yet some are drastic or radical. They are life-changing. They make you a totally different person. Now, transformation is central in spiritual Islam. Muslim mystics get their inspiration for personal transformation not from Buddhism, not from outside Islam. They get their inspiration from the Prophet Muhammad himself. The Prophet said, "Mutu qabla an tamutu." Mutu qabla an tamutu. Die before you die. That's what the Prophet challenged us to do. Die before you die. What does death before death really means? Well, let's ask Rumi. Let's ask Rumi what death before death really means. Rumi said, بهر این گفتان رسول خوش پیام رمز موتو قبل موتن یا کرام همچنان که مرده ام من قبل موت زان طرف آورده ام این سیت و سوت. The messenger of good tidings said, speaking symbolically, die before you die, O nobles. As I died before death and then brought you from yonder this fame and renown. Yonder means from a far distance, and in the case of the Prophet Muhammad, yonder means the hidden world. Rumi says, anyone who wishes to tap into the hidden dimension of this world must undergo a radical transformation. And that's precisely what happened to the Prophet Muhammad. He underwent a drastic transformation. And it was only then that he was able to receive revelation from God. And the Prophet Muhammad called his radical transformation death before dying. That's a metaphor, right? That's a metaphor for a drastic existential transformation. Now, death before death is not a natural death that we will someday and ultimately face. Rather, it is a voluntary death, a death without physical death. Let's hear it from Rumi. نه چنان مرگی که در گوری روی، مرگ تبدیلی که در نوری روی. Not such a death that you will go into a grave, but a death consisting of a spiritual transformation so that you will go into a light. Now, this voluntary death involves going from darkness to light. That's essentially what Rumi teaches. You die from a lower state of existence, and then you will be born again in a higher state. In modern language, it is the death of the ego. It's the death of the ego and all that the ego stands for. This is a drastic, life-changing event when the ego dies. It's a real fitr. Now, hopefully you appreciate what fitr in Islamic mysticism means, right? Fitr is a life changing event, and it may happen to you outside Ramadan. That's when the old self dies and a new self is born. A new person is born. This new person is godly. Now she's going to have different aspirations. She will have different priorities. So in a nutshell, this is what the Prophet Muhammad meant by saying, Mutu qabla an tamutu, die before you die. Now, Christian theology has a similar notion. Do you know what that is? Do you know what the Christian construct similar to die before you die is? Easter, the resurrection of Jesus Christ, which we observed a couple of weeks ago. Just as Muslims have ritualized Fitr, Christians have ritualized Easter. They have turned Easter into a religious holiday with special ceremonies. But Easter also has an inner dimension. It has a mystical dimension. Let me quickly explain what that is. Let me ask you this question. In the Christian tradition, what event precedes Easter? Crucifixion of Jesus. Jesus was crucified, and then 3 days after his burial, he was resurrected. He was born again, but this time in a totally different form, in an altered state. Now, if you ask a mystic such as Rumi, what do you make of the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus? He would say, Jesus really showed us the path to God realization. That's essentially what happened. Jesus showed us the path to becoming godlike. And this path is open to everybody. I don't know whether you've heard of Joseph Campbell or not. He passed away a few years ago. He was a professor of literature and also an expert in comparative religion and comparative mythology. I think Joseph Campbell has said it the best about the mystical meaning of Easter. He says, if you want resurrection, you must have crucifixion. If you want resurrection, you must have crucifixion. You must be willing to crucify your ego. You must be willing to crucify the life you have, which is centered on egoism. Then you will have a new life, which is centered on God. In fact, the wisdom that I just mentioned to you predates Jesus and Muhammad. You have probably seen the snake in ancient religious imagery. Right? Those of you who've taken history of ancient religion, I'm sure you've seen pictures that have snakes in them. The ancient symbol of snake was a metaphor for inner growth. It was a symbol for transformation. How so? Well, snakes shed their skin from time to time. You've probably seen that yourself. Why do snakes shed their skin from time to time? To grow. In order to grow, the snake must shed its skin. Unlike we humans, snake skin does not grow as the snake grows. The snake's insides are literally outgrowing its outside. The snake must remove its restrictive layer, its outermost layer. So it has to shed its skin and grow it again in order to grow in size. This process of shedding skin is painful. It is even dangerous, but it is necessary for growth. When the snake successfully completes the process, it emerges stronger. It emerges larger and healthier. So the snake's skin shedding represents rebirth and renewal. That's why in ancient religions, snake was the symbol of rebirth and transformation. Now, the Prophet Muhammad also asked Muslims, he asked you and I to shed our skin periodically, just like a snake. So a new person is born on the ashes of the old one, a morally stronger and a spiritually healthier person. Ramadan offers a platform to achieve what the Prophet Muhammad preached. With one caveat though, First, we must transform our understanding of the Ramadan fast and Eid al-Fitr. We must remember that we are fasting for a renewal, not to discharge a religious obligation. That's what the extraordinary and perfect fast are all about. So we are almost out of time, but I don't want to leave you with some abstract ideas about rebirth and personal transformation, because then Darius is going to be on my case, right? Darius loves actual real-world examples. So let me give you some concrete examples of a personal transformation, some concrete forms that a spiritual or character transformation may take. The first example. Many of us suffer from bad habits that hold us back in life. Now, bad habits come in all shapes and sizes. The most destructive bad habit affect our character. Let me repeat one more time. The most destructive bad habits affect our character. Things like prejudice, jealousy, pride, deceit, unforgiveness. The Ramadan fast was specifically designed by God to address our bad habits. Granted, this is not how the average Muslim views and understands the underlying philosophy of the Ramadan fast, but the Ramadan fast was really designed by God to address our bad habits. Recall that the Quran says the Ramadan fast was prescribed so you acquire more taqwa. You embolden and strengthen your self-restraint. You strengthen your piety, righteousness, so that you have more God awareness, more God consciousness. That's what Ramadan should ideally promote in us. Now, when taqwa is strengthened in us, when taqwa takes root in us, it will be a game changer. It will be a game changer. It will transform us. We will shed our bad habits. Then we will relate to the outside world in a totally different way. Another example of a personal transformation. character flaws also come in all shapes and sizes. A particular character flaw, which is quite nasty and quite common, is judging others. Judging others is a terrible character flaw, and unfortunately it is quite prevalent and common. And judging others also takes different forms. For example, we tend to point out things that someone else should be doing while we don't do those things ourselves. It's good for others to do it, but not for us. Or we notice faults in others when we have those exact faults ourselves. I think Jesus Christ said it the best. That saying of Jesus is captured in the Gospel of Luke 6, verses 41 and 42. Really fascinating. Take a listen. Jesus said, "How can you say to your brother, 'Brother, let me remove that splinter in your eye,' when you don't even notice the wooden beam in your own eye? You hypocrite, remove the wooden beam from your eye first, then you will see clearly to remove the splinter in your brother's eye." Right? That's hypocrisy. That's hypocrisy, and unfortunately, this disease afflicts many of us. Again, taqwa is the remedy for this disease that afflicts our character, judging others, which is also rooted in hypocrisy. This will be a great transformation. Let me give you another example of a personal transformation. There is another flaw that a great number of us have: illusory self-image. A self-image that is based on illusions that we have about ourselves, right? Many of us have illusions about who and how we are. Oh, I'm perfect. I am flawless. There is nothing wrong with me. Problems? Sure, there exist a lot of problems. But outside, not in here, right? There is always some other thing. There is always some other person we blame for our bad situation. Now, our self-image gives us comfort. Our self-image is a refuge. We do everything we can to preserve our self-image. Why? Why do we want to preserve our false self-image? Because if our false self-image is shattered, we will plunge into an existential crisis. We take different measures to preserve our illusory self-image. We do all sorts of things to preserve our false self-image. For example, we prefer to search for flaws in others and advertise other people's shortcomings rather than dealing with our own flaws and shortcomings. Because if we find shortcomings in ourselves, that false self-image is going to shatter. Deflection. Deflection is another psychological measure that we often take to preserve our false self-image. When we make a mistake and the limelight is on us, what do? Immediately we try to redirect the limelight away from ourselves. We start criticizing the other. We start blaming the other. And that's what psychologists call deflection. Again, Taqwa is a remedy. Taqwa is a remedy for this problem. Taqwa forces us to face our flaws, to face our shortcomings. Taqwa demands that we take personal responsibility. It demands that we hold ourselves accountable for our thoughts, feelings, and actions. When you are in a bad situation, right? Next time you are in a bad situation, if you look at yourself rather than the other, that's a sure sign that you have shed your skin. That is a sure sign of a personal transformation, because you realize that the problem is right here, not in the outside. Let me give you one final example of a transformation. And we can all use this transformation. Dealing with addiction to social media. Dealing with addiction to messaging apps. Seriously, this is an addiction. We don't unfortunately look at it that way, but many of us are addicted to social media and messaging apps. Let me quote you a passage from a study done on this very subject, addiction to social media. It says, quote, "Social media platforms such as Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram produce the same neural circuitry that is caused by gambling and recreational drugs to keep consumers using their products as much as possible." So yes, there is such an addiction. It's not figment of my imagination. I mean, researchers are working on it. Most of the text messages, the videos, and the materials that we are bombarded with every day is a total waste of time. It's a distraction. And worse, they make us more confused. They make us more confused about the world in which we live. There is so much misinformation and disinformation out there, and that's what causes the confusion for us. If by an act of God you somehow manage to drastically minimize your screen time, that would be a great transformation. But guess what? I can go on for hours talking about personal transformation, but we are out of time and I have to stop right here. I hope that, you know, what I shared with you today about personal transformation, especially as it relates to the Ramadan fast and Fitr, was of some value to you. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.